Hi, this is KURU 89.1, GMCR.org, and this is the show Use Your Words, Authors Speak. We'd like to welcome the poet Stuart S. Warren. Stuart has lived in Silver City just since February, but he's lived in the Southwest for quite a while. He's published 25 books available on Amazon. He's also a publishing coach, catalyst, and community organizer. He is the sole owner of Mercury Heartlink, a small press in New Mexico. Stuart is a poet who sees with his heart. He knows the landscape of the Southwest as if it was an extension of his own body. When you read his poetry, you can feel the images he writes about. He tends carefully to the small details and does not let us turn our heads from what he's observed. Yet the whole of the story he tells is evident and clear. His poems keep calling us back for another read, always mining his own depths while staying keenly aware of the natural world. He ties the two together so tight it leaves us slightly breathless. Stuart, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Elise.
I know you were born in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and that you left home early.
I did.
How early?
Well, gosh. I mean, I started running away from home when I was 11, but it was just kind of trial and error. I was testing myself out there in the world. It wasn't until I was 13 that I actually joined the carnival in Galveston, Texas.
The carnival. That's great. And I know that you moved to Taos in 1991, but I know that you'd lived in the Southwest before that.
I'd hitchhiked through this part of the country from Oklahoma many, many times and stopped and had a lot of experiences and fell in love with the land and was received by the land, which is important, and developed a rapport, if you will, and knew myself better when I was on this land, when I was in the Intermountain West and on the desert. And so in the 60s and again in the 70s, I lived in various parts of what I call Norteño, which is the New Mexico from Santa Fe north. And then, as you said, I did move here to Taos in 91, yes.
Stuart, did you want to read us one of your poems just to start off?
I'd be glad to give you one. This is from a book called Humankind, Poems from Inner and Outer Space, and the title of this poem is Indigenous. You were almost home and didn't know it. Rio Grande uplift, Colorado plateau, high plains where the tall grass gives way to the short grass and cacti, home to Shoshone, home to Dakota, home to Absaroka, Grand Tetons where the ancients still dwell. Nothing as sad as a land where the spirits have packed and gone. The vacancy nearly killed you, your anger you couldn't understand. Listen, singer, we know your name. Your wakeful steps honor ours. You find the markers, ghost bundles tied in the wind, shapes that no longer spin, tipped over on rock, occasional twinkle behind the veil. As scout, you remained to bring the stragglers home. Give these hills an honorable burial. You are a priest at the finish of one good world. Disregard the current grid, overlay of slave empire. Put your nose to the wind. Is there a fire that still smolders, children huddled under a blanket? Speak only to those who would listen. Tell them of our new home. Prepare the patterns, initiate the bridge. Your horses wait in Knight's Canyon. Do you not hear their stomping in moonlight and soft red dirt? Take no more scalps. That business has been done. See the trail of our leaving, crossing the star field. We send directions and medicine for completion. We know that your time there is hard, but also, is it worthy? Hanta yo.
Oh, thank you, Stuart. That was beautiful. I love how you write about the land as if it were a character, which it is. It's so much a part of our world, especially in the Southwest, where every drop of water is important. I see that you are opening another book and the Song of It at the Santuario de Chimayo. Looks like the next one you're going to read to us. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, the title of the book is The Song of It. The subtitle is A Travelogue of Norteño, Poems and Personal Stories. And all of these poems and short prose pieces have to do with my own personal experience, again, in Norteño, in northern New Mexico, a little bit into southern Colorado, and maybe dipping over into Utah. Anyway, this poem is titled, At the Santuario de Chimayo, Two Women Approach the Altar. One crosses herself, looks up at Jesus. The other steps boldly to a statue of the Virgin and presses a two-finger kiss on the face of the Mother of God. We find our own way back to the river. We find our way like those flakes of tears and chips of dried blood that fall from the chiseled retablos lining the white plastered walls at Chimayo. The santuario was built on top of a healing spring, just like my own temple. Today, I purchased another milagro to bury in the earth in the hole in the floor of that sunken room next to all those retired crutches, how they hang like crosses on the road to our waking. I ducked into the narrow cell and settled on my knees below a cloak of candle smoke. A chorus of red prayers flickering in wrought iron racks, proof that we can observe our own suffering. I pushed my secret wish into the cool, damp sand and prayed. I delight in the use of props, churches, poems, lifetimes, planets, and corn. Everything has become an instrument. Even my longing feels like lightning striking in both directions. When we're remembering together like this, I hear a river with each of our names tumbling toward the sun.
Thank you. That was magnificent. Another beautiful place in New Mexico that's so special.
And another place not too far from there is Velarde. And this poem is also personal, as all the poems are. They're all about me. And through the lens of my particular life and experience. But this one goes a little deeper, and I hope it will speak for itself. It's in the form of a pantoum. I'm not a big writer of form poems. Things like Sestinas make me crazy, you know. But the pantoum lends itself nicely to rhythm. There's an opportunity for music because of the repeating lines. You may notice that in this construction that there are going to be two lines left out of the beginning, and they always come at the very end. You insert them back in the last stanza of quatrains. Anyway, for poetry lovers or academics, all the red chili. All the red chile and Velarde and miles of ripe melons couldn't hold you any longer on these dusty and rutted roads. And miles of ripe melons and thousands of honey I'm sorries on these dusty and rutted roads with poverty naked in the ditches. And thousands of honey I'm sorries and you trying to make me see with poverty naked in the ditches that this was never your place. And trying to make me see, holding disdain as your shield, that this was never your place, this clanky silver and bitter sage. Holding disdain as your shield in front of that frightened child, this clanky silver and bitter sage, this landscape harsh between us. In front of that frightened child with frostbitten fingers, this landscape harsh between us, never hearing the apples fall. With frostbitten fingers, you went back east, never hearing the apples fall for all the blood of our effort. You went back east, couldn't hold you any longer for all the blood of our effort, all the red chile in Velarde.
Thank you. When I write poetry, too, I'm so touched by this land and the way it speaks to us, and it seems to just lend itself to our own personal unfoldment and understanding of ourselves. So I really appreciate your poetry and how it does that too.
You know, one of the poems, if I may, kind of work, moving over to the what we call the Four Corners part of the state, and that land and people and energy, magic, spirits. This poem, along with many of this type and from that part of the state, address a more intimate relationship that I have with the land. This is called Navajo Land, West of Nagizi. Everything is made of white, almost invisible ripples. That lizard, that rock, those car parts. The days here are poured west through distant storms, firewalls, violet ice, silhouette, silence. Night is a word that means remember. Everything here loses its name. Nothing stays the same. Even the wind sleeps, dreaming new faces over the land. I could remain a stranger, but I sense a self everywhere. At the base of a layered wash, curving pink, in the wake of a wing, a voice from the ground. Walking at dusk, a cliff rose stopped me on the path to talk, suggested I wear pale yellow in my speech, sandstone shoes. I have believed too much. I have believed too many things. I am leaving myself for the wind.
Thank you. That was beautiful. It seems like the more we explore the land here in the Southwest, the deeper that we find out who we are and how that relates. I know we just have another minute before our break. I don't know if you have a short poem that you'd like to read in lieu of that little bit of time.
This is called You Call the Circle for my poet friend Tani Arnas. They seem to dance in their own light, sparks moving through the trees, trumpet flowers turning to face you. You've called them to attention, and now their curious and wide eyes circle your heart's desire. What would you have, and what would you know? Shelter in the forest of errors, a gathering of past travelers, the surety of good acts going forward, healing power of your magnetic gaze, or perhaps to touch the currents that deliver your phenomena, to feel them coursing through your lighter body, the voice behind the voice, the love bringing you ever forward. Gather these lights together as purple flowers on a spring wreath. They are your hands and eyes in the nominal world, your purest thoughts. What would you have, and what would you know, as you swirl among the stars? You enjoy everything that's here, then you enjoy everything that's here again.
Oh, thank you, Stuart. I love that poem. We're going to take a very short break, and we'll be right back in a minute. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Use Your Words, Authors Speak. My name is Elise Stuart, and I'm interviewing Stuart S. Warren, a poet who lives here in Silver City. He has lived around the Southwest quite a bit, though. And I was going to ask you, Stuart, how did you begin writing? How did that happen in your life?
You know, I've always seen myself as a writer somehow, and that's not necessarily someone that's publishing books or in that respect. But there's a spirit, if you will, to being a writer that has always been with me. And it's a way of noticing the world, of what I call witnessing. And I think that that's my job, more so than being involved as an activist, although I have certainly been involved in activism and in various ways and so forth in my life. But being a writer for me is witnessing. And I remember reading Kurt Vonnegut Jr. early on, and he had a wonderful way of talking about the foibles of humanity, you know, sometimes looking at us in our very worst, very messiest. And yet, it always lacked a harsh judgment. There was a compassion that ran through all of his descriptions of people, you know, doing what we do. And I was moved by that. And I wanted to be, and still do, I wanted to be someone who can observe humanity and simply play it back, reflect it back, and particularly in its very best, and to reflect back the absolute beauty and power and magic of this planet of life, but of certainly of humanity. I'm not shy at all about talking about the things that don't work. I grew up in an extremely difficult childhood. Mm-hmm. Been in some pretty rough places and seen messiness, at an extreme level, maybe, in jails and penitentiaries and on the street. Yet there is a goodness that is so often missed, that is an inherent part not only of life, but particularly of humankind. And I feel a joyous obligation and a responsibility to reflect that, to hold that up.
I think that's one of my favorite things about your poetry, that it doesn't shirk from looking at difficult things, difficult issues or difficult parts of ourselves, but it still embraces the love within each person, even the love within this land. And that's what I come away with. I'm always inspired. I'm not taken down by it at all, although there are some difficult messages. And I really appreciate that, because I think that's part of telling the truth. We have to look at the truth deeply and then leave it open for reflection to whoever the readers are.
And as we investigate what we would call truth, then it changes. It morphs, it transforms simply through our attention. And when we can look without self-condemnation as much as possible, or condemnation of others, and simply observe and investigate, then what we thought was truth appears differently in the next moment. And isn't that the wonderful thing, to be moving with life constantly from one new moment to the next? You know, you asked about writing and how did I begin? And, you know, people often ask that kind of thing. And there was something, you know, historical that I could say. In Taos, New Mexico, a spiritual advisor told me, "Stuart, you're going to take this poetry class now." I'm like, what? A what? and so I went to work with Christine Hemp, a Northwest writer who was living in Taos, New Mexico at the time, and spent a couple of years working with her. The thing that she did many things for me. She introduced me to poets and taught me how to appreciate them and to, you know, to taught me to read mm-hmm. poetry, really. The thing that she did primarily for me was to give me a craft that I could bring to moments of passion. I think for any artist, regardless of your medium, that one of the most difficult things is to have those moments of inspiration and passion and no craft to bring to it, to sit in front of a blank canvas and not be able to do anything with the paint. Same with a blank page. I think people go crazy over that. I think people kill themselves over that kind of stuff. To be so deeply moved by life and to have something within you that just must be expressed and not have a craft. So she gave me craft that I could bring to it. That craft, for the first few years, of course, was something that I engaged all the time. Oh, line break here and this and that and working all that stuff. And, you know, and syntax and meter and, you know, slant rhyme, etc. And then after a while, it becomes a working part of the mind.
Right. At first, we use the structure. And then eventually, the structure is just so basic that you can just almost sprout wings and take off, and the structure is the secondary thing, but not the first.
Nicely said.
Yeah. I see the book is open. Please read us another poem.
Well, I was ready. From here I stand. I must speak for myself on these matters. I have no armies standing behind me on the banks of this river. Bullets and words whiz every which way. I say for myself what I see. I say for myself where I go. The blue coats, the red, the gray coats, the green, my family with feathers in their hair. I am on the side of deer bedded down beside the water. I am on the side of all that must migrate. I'm on the side of a hill that will heave again with red-hot sun. I eat what I kill. Show me your long knife, and I will show my taste for you. I cannot be your friend if friendship calls for religion, the religion of woe is me, the religion of us and them, the religion of zombie conquest. I have stood in the circle, and I have walked away. I have circled the world, and I stand where I stand. Brothers and sisters, I will call you, not because we have the same handshake or credit card, not because I am in need of your tattoo or vote, but because all that bleeds will wake, and all that wakes is one. I am on the side of deer standing in tall grass. Can you not see that we are dancing?
Oh, thank you. That was magnificent. Yes, love it. So, does a poem just come to you? Does an idea just come to you? How do you begin?
I rarely have an idea about a particular construct, a concept. I will sit and write. I have a pretty much daily practice. Of course, some of those turn into nothing but exercises. But I show up for the moment in the hopes that something will happen. And what happens is sometimes just the first line is anything that might be in my field of vision, that might, you know, come through my mind, some experience of the day or the day before. And if I surrender to that or to that something deeper inside, pretty soon I'm in. That's what I call it. And I think you know that. At least you're nodding. As a poet, you know that. You're when you're in, right? I'm in. Here we go. And this is as true of the poem as really the rest of my entire life. My life is none of my business, right? and then, of course, the paradox is that, you know, I am 100% responsible for everything I think and say and do. And my life is none of my business. And that certainly is what I experience in the writing of poems. And so for me, they are, as a Gemini, of course, this is kind of how I think and live, but it's all about integration and synthesis of what I'm learning and working with at that time, as reflected in landscape and in situations that might arise with others. So everything really is a reflection of the impulses from the invisible world, from the divine.
That's beautifully said. I'm going to take just a little moment to announce an upcoming event that Stuart and I are going to present along with Dale Ruklos. We're going to have a collaboration of poets and musicians on July 17th, 7 to 9 p.m. The Church of Harmony, totally free, 7th in Arizona, if you would like to come and participate. Again, it's called The Incorruptible Heart, and we'll be reading poetry, and there will be some music. We invite you to come.
I think there might be time for one or two more, and we'll see. Okay. And this is a little more local. I'd like to thank J.J. Wilson for giving me the title on this. Excavations. I drove up to the old mine, but would you say it was closed? From a distance, the layers are pale turquoise, pink, and rotten orange. From a distance, you imagine the vitality and rowdy clamor. Not quite everything's been exposed here, only what we knew the uses for. But not many folks up here now. A security guard, some druggies parked behind the church, a family of roadrunners pecking and dodging. I was chasing a small storm, though some would prefer to say a rainbow, but I swear I was just looking to rinse off another layer of dust, a sign as simple as that. After all, whole families have been raised up and buried here, where the town of Fierro rust back into the ground, where a rock chimney is all that's left of a house fire. Listen, that bustling community cooked pintos and chilies here, drugged the kids to school by their ears, beseeched St. Anthony, tied ribbons, dug out snow against the door, celebrated victories that would go unnoticed in gentrified towns. I drove up to the old mine and watched the weather come in, swing around the range, put its face in the dirt. One storm caught some red as it went down. My blood listens to the color of iron when it's wet. How about you? Can you taste the copper on your tongue? Can you hear the foreman yell to the big shovels, calling out for a coupling and more steam? Somebody failed to bring a paycheck home. Somebody fought for their life. Somebody died in the cabin up on the mountain, but it was a month before anyone knew. If a deal gets signed back east, the price goes up. Surely we can contend with a little rain when there's work on the hill. I drove up to the old mine to watch the sun go down.
Thank you, Stuart. That was perfect. I want to thank you for being with us today, and I want to announce that in the next 2 weeks, we will have Beate Sigrid's daughter. Her latest novel is Audrey. She is a novelist and poet that lives in Silver City as well. And again, The Incorruptible Heart will be on July 17th at the Church of Harmony. For those of you who would like to come, this is Alee Stuart again. We really appreciate your listening to our show. If you have any comments, you can reach me at my email. It is aleestuart16@gmail.com. Thank you again, Stuart. You've just been a wonderful guest to have here.
Thank you, and also to Kyle and Glenn who are in the studio with us.